The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
It is a great pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in the Czech Republic. Daniel Gladiš is someone I'm sure many of you know very well by now. He has truly been a mentor to this community and has shared great ideas and wisdom in the past. He may not need much of an introduction, but I'll give one anyway. Daniel has amassed a market-beating track record since starting Vltava Fund in 2004. Vltava Fund is a value-oriented, research-driven investment fund focused on investing in good companies run by quality management. Previously, Daniel was a director and chairman of the board of directors of ABN AMRO Asset Management Czech from 1999 to 2004. Daniel has authored two best-selling books, which have been published in his native Czech. We truly appreciate the wisdom, insights, and ideas Daniel has shared with us in the past and are grateful to have him with us again in this live online forum. So on behalf of the MOI Global membership community, a very warm welcome back to you, Daniel. Please go ahead.
Good morning, John. Thank you for the invitation, and also thank you for the introduction. It's good to be back as every year. The company I want to talk about today is called Babcock International. It's a British company. And why Babcock? Because whenever I see a share price looking like this, I usually wonder if this is an opportunity. It may have been an excessive optimism in 2014 and now excessive pessimism, or maybe it's just a business that's, you know, doing so badly that it's not an opportunity. So when I saw that the stock price halved in last 3 or 4 years, I started paying closer attention and I looked at the business, and I actually think that it's a quite compelling investment opportunity. In a summary, I think Babcock is a high quality company with remarkably stable margins. It operates in a business that has very high barriers to entry, as you see later. It's especially interesting today because it has a very low cyclicality. So when everyone's talking about recession and market volatility, this business has actually very good long-term visibility and low cyclicality. And it currently trades at multiples close to historical lows. So let's take a look bit on the business that Babcock is doing. This picture shows you, you know, to get an idea quickly, is the complaint maintenance work that Babcock is doing on the Queen Elizabeth aircraft carrier in the Rosyth dockyard. So you can see from the beginning that it's probably business that requires quite high level of complexity, and also, you know, you cannot show up at a Department of Defense door and say, I want to build this. You need to have a certain qualities, so the barriers to entry to Babcock businesses are quite high. So anyway, Babcock is a leading provider of engineering services for defense, emergency services, and civil nuclear markets in the UK and international. In the UK, it is the second largest supplier of government services after BEA. Much smaller than BEA, but still the second largest. In summary, its biggest strength is the ability to deliver very complex engineering services to customers around the world. In more specifically, the first core strength is technology and expertise. The company operates in an environment which is heavily regulated. It requires very deep sector-specific expertise. It needs to provide very critical and complex engineering, integrate very multiple, you know, various technologies. It's really a very difficult business. Babcock also owns a strategic infrastructure and assets. The most important of them is the are the dockyards that are able to service the entire nuclear fleet of British submarines. It owns some of the infrastructure and assets directly, and it operates some that are owned by customers. It also, for example, owns over 500 aircraft in its fleet. Its operating business model is based on long-term collaborative relationship with customers. Some of the programs that Babcock is involved in are running for decades, and the long-term contracts are very, you know, important part of their business. It gives them visibility and good and provides low cyclicality. And of course, overall, as I said, this business has significant barriers of entry. Let's take a look at the business mix. 75% of their business they call focus markets, which is defense, emergency services, and civil nuclear. And 25% are called adjacent markets, that is energy and marine, rail and power, oil and gas, aviation, and airports. And the business mix itself is shifting a little bit in a way that the focus markets are expected to grow probably to about 85% in the medium term. And the adjacent markets are going to go down partially by divestitures and partially by, you know, putting less emphasis on them. But the company has leadership positions into their main businesses, that is in defense, emergency services, and civil nuclear. In defense, it is, as I said, the second largest supplier in the UK. The domestic defense business is quite large. Just, you know, remember that the Ministry of Defense equipment plan for 10 years is in the size of 180 billion sterling. The growth comes from long-term programs and is also driven by technology, by increasing and evolving in technology. In international defense, the company has presence, established presence in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and France. It has some submarine programs in South Korea and Spain. And it is especially the international defense where Babcock sees significant long-term growth potential. In the emergency services, Babcock is number one aerial firefighting provider in Europe and also a number one aerial medical services provider with established presence in Spain, Portugal, Italy, France, and Sweden. It has recently entered Scandinavia, especially Norway and Finland. And in the UK, it provides services like air ambulance, police, search and rescue, Metropolitan Police and London Fire Brigade services. In international markets, it is number one in Australia and has recently entered Canada, and there are significant opportunities for emergency services business in North America. In civil nuclear, what they do is they do decommissioning of nuclear power station. There's a large long-term program of decommissioning in the UK. The UK government forecasts over 100 billion sterling spent over long-term, and that includes sites like Dounreay, Magnox, or Sellafield. There's also a fleet of aging AGR nuclear power station in the UK where Babcock does decommissioning. Babcock also supports the existing power stations and building of new ones. There's the new built nuclear called Hinkley Point, and Babcock is also involved in internationally in civil nuclear business, especially in Japan, Canada, and Spain. Here is a graphic, you know, expression of its business. So you can see that about 52 is defense, 15% emergency services, 10% civil nuclear, and 23% adjacent markets. And you can also see the breakdown between marine, nuclear, land, aviation. The yellow spots are areas where the company sees the, you know, the biggest potential in the future, and the listed sectors, the energy and marine, rail and power, South Africa and airports are the ones where you would see probably some exits and divestitures. Let's take a look at the group order book. You can see it's a size of about 17 billion. That's about 3.5 times annual revenues. The annual revenues are close to 5 billion sterling. And it's nearly equally spread between land, aviation, nuclear, and marine. What's also important is that Babcock has a very large group pipeline. Of course, many companies would say, yes, we have a big pipeline of business, and you know, eventually not much of this will materialize. But in case of Babcock, I think this is an important number, because historically, they are able to win about 40% of contracts they are bidding for, and they are able to win over 90% of rebids. So the pipeline is actually, in Babcock case, very good indicator of the future business. You can also see that currently the international is about 20% of the order book. But when you look at the pipeline, then the international is about 40% of it. So you can expect that in the future, the business mix will shift both towards the core businesses and also more towards the international business. So let's take now a bit closer look at the Babcock business. I want to spend some time on it because it's important to understand how you know, difficult the business is, you know, in terms of performance, you know, how high barriers entry there are, and how good visibility some of the contracts are providing to Babcock. And you know, I want to demonstrate that Babcock really is a high quality business. So let's start with nuclear. What Babcock does is Babcock basically services the entire fleet of UK nuclear nuclear submarines. It's a very trusted partner to the submarine delivery agency, and in partnership with the Royal Navy, MOD, and SDA, it continues to develop strategic naval base infrastructure. Besides that, it also explores and develops international markets for nuclear business. It has also a very large land business, where in defense it is the British Army's strategic readiness partner. It you know, services vehicles, you know, tanks, and provides training to the army, and it continues to provide also international businesses, especially in Australia. In aviation, the goal is to become the largest aerial emergency service providers in the world, and to develop the defense business in existing and new international markets. In terms of the size, the marine business provides about 1.1 billion of revenues, which is split about 3/4 in defense and 1/4 for energy and marine. And in terms of geography, about 66% is domestic and 34% international. And the international business comes mainly from Australia, South Korea, Spain, and Oman, and North America. What they do is that in marine, is that in the UK defense, they provide surface ship support, training and systems and equipment services. They service 75% of warship fleet regarding its deep maintenance services. They provide fleet time support for warships. They design, build, assembly and support the Queen Elizabeth carrier. And they also provide extensive training for the Royal Navy. In the international defense, they provide submarine support, surface ship support, training and systems and equipment services. They provide 100% of Canadian submarine refits. They service US and UK common missile compartments. They provide weapons handling and launch technology. So really very, very highly technical services. In energy and marine, they provide, again, design, engineering consultancy, complex asset support and systems and equipment. When we look at its core strengths, then again, it is advanced technology, some technical expertise, and the ownership of infrastructure and assets. Just for illustration, they have more than 5,000 technical staff. They have a very long-term heritage of technical authority. They are able to deliver critical programs for complex assets in highly regulated environments and provide world-class naval training services. The addressable markets, companies like to talk about the addressable markets because it seems like their potential is very, very large. But in case of Babcock, let's take a look at that as well. The 10-year addressable market for UK defense is about 15 billion, for international defense about 12, and for energy and marine 12 as well. The market share is high in UK defense and low in international defense and energy and marine. Regarding the future growth, I think in UK defense, it will come from the new programs that would allow it to grow above the market. In terms of the international defense, I think they expect to increase its market share in the medium term, and the same for energy and marine. And overall, the company expects this part of business revenue to grow at around 4% annually. The order book and pipeline is about 3 billion for order book and pipeline about 5 billion. And the key opportunities are in the Royal Navy platform, training for Royal Navy, Canadian submarine program, Australian submarine program. It's important to realize that some of these programs run for decades. So for example, the Type 23 frigates, which they service, they're running in service till about 2025, by which time they would be switched to Type 31 frigates, which would run in service till about 2045, with potential life extension to 2050. Then you have the Osor ship Albion class, which is running in service till about 2025, and then there's the potential life extension until 2035. The Queen Elizabeth class carrier is expected to be in service till 2050, with potential life extension to 2070. So you can clearly see that once the company gets involved in some of these programs, the business can run really for decades and provides very good visibility. The same can be said about its nuclear business. What Babcock does is it has been supporting the entire fleet of British nuclear submarines for 50 years. It's sustains the entirety of its submarine fleet, and it also takes a leading role in all civil nuclear, that is from building, operational support, and decommissioning. The nuclear sector provides about 1 billion of revenues per year, and it splits into about 70% UK defense and about 30% civil nuclear. The company owns some critical infrastructure. It manages and operates two of the three UK naval bases. It owns Devonport and Rosyth Dockyards, which are used for design and delivery of critical complex projects for nuclear power station, nuclear submarines. It also is involved in AWE, which is Atomic Weapons Establishment. So basically, they are able to handle, service, design, and decommission, systems that involve nuclear weapons, including things like, decommissioning of redundant plutonium handling facilities, waste management, and stuff like that. So really, really very highly technical engineering stuff. In civil nuclear, they do decommissioning, as I said, decommissioning of power stations that are going out of business. They provide nuclear services, that is, concept design, engineering, build and manufacture of plant and equipment, manufacture of radioactive waste packages. They do provide operations and maintenance support to site licensees. And also, they have some specialist radiological laboratories and radiometrics. They're also providing design and implementation to fit out Hinkley Point C, which is a new build. And they are positioning itself or themselves for future nuclear UK projects, which are coming. Again, their core strengths here are technology and expertise. They have around 5,000 nuclear trained specialists. They have highly skilled program and project management capability. They have significant embedded nuclear know-how and experience of complex nuclear engineering. As I said, they own the Devonport Naval Dockyard and Rosyth Naval Dockyard, which are the two most important infrastructure assets that they own. Basically, that gives them sort of monopoly position in this business. They also own some dry docks, nuclear processing, handling and storage facilities, etc. Some of these programs are again very, very long term, and it gives them very good visibility. The size of the market, the submarine support, the 10-year addressable market for submarine support is estimated to be about 23 billion. For naval base, about 2 billion. For infrastructure, 2 billion. The submarine defueling and dismantling about 8 billion, and the AWE about 9 billion. Their market share is high in submarine support and naval base, and they expect to grow with the market, especially getting involved in the long-term programs. Infrastructure and submarine defueling and dismantling are new markets for Babcock. They are running some programs in Devonport for infrastructure and SDP program for submarine defueling and dismantling. And these are new opportunities for the companies. There's about 20 out-of-service submarines to be dismantled, plus there are some in-service submarines and future classes of submarines coming into service. They expect this part of business to grow also at around 4% annually. The civil nuclear market, the addressable 10-year addressable market size is about 10 billion for the UK decommissioning, about 4.5 billion for UK new build, and 6 billion for nuclear services, and about 20 billion for international. Their market share is very low in, or not very low, but low for UK decommissioning and for UK new build. Their decommissioning programs run in Dounreay, Magnox, and EDF stations. And for UK new build, their programs is related to Hinkley Point C. Their growth will just come with the market, but the most potential in this business, in the civil nuclear market, comes from the international business. They are already involved in Japan, Canada, and Spain. You know, in Japan, they do some business in Fukushima, and they think they want to build on their UK expertise and, you know, get some more international business. They are new entrants in the civil nuclear international market, and they expect that they will be growing significantly there. For the civil nuclear market, the company expects to grow revenues at around 4% annually. The current order book is about 4 billion, split about 57% defense and 43% civil nuclear, and the pipeline is about 2 billion, where the civil nuclear provides about two-thirds. When I spoke about the longevity of the programs, I'd like to also mention the longevity of the of multiple UK submarine programs. So, for example, the Vanguard class is in service till 2023. Then for another 10 years, there will be, you know, under life extension, and another 10 years decommissioning programs. Then it will be transitioned to Dreadnought class at around 2030, which would run in service till about 2065 before life extension and decommissioning. The currently used Trafalgar class, which is in service until 2025, is currently being transitioned to Astute class, which will be in service to 2050, and then replaced by another service which will be running even longer. And along all of these programs, there's a submarine disposal program, you know, going on. So again, Babcock is servicing entire fleet of UK nuclear submarines. So this is a program which runs for decades and gives very, very high visibility and stability to Babcock business. Regarding the civil business, the UK civil business, the main market opportunities I see in the EDF power stations and operations, then in Magnox reactor decommissioning and dismantling, and then new bits at Hinkley Point and potentially Sizewell, Bradwell, etc. The international market provides the most potential. Babcock has a UK leadership position in high hazard defueling, decommissioning, and waste management, and they want to sell this expertise abroad. As I said, they're already involved in Japan, Canada, and Spain, and there are many more other countries where business can be found. Babcock has also a very large land sector, which is split into the land defense and adjacent markets. In land defense, what they do is that they provide long-term contracts focused on vehicle support and military technical training. And the adjacent markets are basically contracts like, in South Africa, where they provide some significant short cycle work and some other businesses. The revenues from land sector are about 1.6 billion annually, and about 38% of that comes from defense. Most of the rest comes from other countries. The other adjacent markets include some emergency services, so that's for London Fire Brigade and Metropolitan Police. They also provide firefighter training. They have rail and power business. They are the leading provider to National Grid. They do some track renewal and signaling works. They provide baggage system operations for airports and etc. In defense, they provide vehicle support for mobility vehicles, you know, up to the main battle tanks. They procure, maintain, and repair about 2,000 army heavy construction vehicles, and they provide excellent training. They actually train about 21,000 soldiers every year, and they provide about 750,000 training days every year. Again, in this business, the core strengths are technical expertise, infrastructure and assets, and the operating model, which is based on partnership with its main customers. Speaking about the addressable size of the land's defense market, it's about 8 billion for UK vehicle support, 8 billion for UK training, and then much more, maybe more than 20 billion for international vehicle support and more than 10 billion for international training. Now here their market share is high for UK vehicle support and medium for UK training, and here they expect to grow slightly faster than the market as new programs come online and scope of their business is expanded. But the long run, the biggest opportunities are in the international business, where there are new entrants. They have a small position in international vehicle support in Australia and basically no positions today in international training. But they see long-term opportunities both across Europe and in other countries. And the land defense market is expected to grow at around 3% per annum in long run. In aviation, what they do is also an important part of their business. They save lives with aerial emergency medical and search and rescue services. They protect communities with firefighting operations, and they support the defense by supporting air forces in the UK and overseas. These businesses are typically based on long-term contracts. So for example, you know, Canada firefighting program runs for 10 years, as well as Norway air ambulance program. They have, you know, 530 aircraft and more than 1,300 pilots. So again, you know, they have built a certain size and scope, which gives them barriers to entry against competitors. They aim to become the largest aerial emergency services provider in the world. They want to grow the business in established countries and also enter new countries and regions. In the defense business, they want to become also world leader in flight training and build on significant pipeline of opportunities. The company operates, besides UK and Ireland, they operate in Scandinavia, in southern Europe, Portugal, Spain, France, Italy, and then also in Canada and Australia. The core strengths here again are technology and expertise, the own infrastructure and assets, and also the operating model, which is based on long-term contracts and strong customer relationship. In terms of the size, the aerial emergency service market, the 10-year addressable market is about 7.5 billion for aerial emergency medical services, 5 billion for aerial firefighting, and 3 billion for aerial search and rescue. The market share is medium in the first two and low in the last one. And the new growth should come mainly from new geographies across Europe, Canada, and Australasia. The aviation defense market is another business of those. They expect it to grow by about 5% per annum. They provide flying training in the UK. They provide aircraft support in the UK and internationally. They have UK air station support and maintenance and repair overhaul. And again, this is a market where they expect to grow, especially internationally, and about 5% per annum. So the whole business model includes long and short cycle work. The long-term contracts, represent about 80% of Babcock business. There are especially in defense. They provide very high level of visibility. They are also of very strategic of very high strategic importance to their customers, and margins here are over 11%. So it's the key of their business. Then they do some short cycle work. It represents about 15% of their business. The level of visibility here, of course, is only medium because the longevity of these business is shorter, and also margins are smaller, around 5%. Then the last 5% of their business is represented by procurement related businesses, which have very low level of visibility and very low margins, typically between, you know, less than 5%. And they are seen as an enabler, that the, you know, as business that enables Babcock to get some other businesses, especially the long-term contracts with high margins and high visibility. Regarding the contract type, the marine and nuclear business is usually done on target cost or shared risk contract type. The land and aviation business usually on fixed price contract type. The capital intensity is the highest in aviation because they own a lot of aircraft, and is the lowest in land, where basically they provide services and they need to own the least infrastructure. The capital intensity in marine and nuclear is medium, because especially in marine they own the dockyards, dry docks. The margins are highest in marine. In 2019, the margins, the EBIT margins were about 13.8 for marine, followed by 13.1 in aviation, 11.2 in nuclear, and 7.8 in land. Let's take a look at some basic numbers. You can see that the company is growing, not very fast, but steadily, with the exception of last year, where they had some step down in revenues because they sold some businesses. They sold about 150 million of revenues, you know, worth of businesses, and there were also some program exits. But other than that, the business is growing slowly but steadily. And it also is characterized by very stable margins. When you look at the last, I don't know, 7 years or so, you would see that the group margin is very stable. The lowest in the last 7 years was 10.6, which was in 2012 and 2014, and the highest was 11.5, which was in 2013, 15, and 18. So the margins actually are very stable, around 11%. So it gives the company, you know, this flavor of stability. So combination of good visibility of long-term contracts and stable margins make this company, you know, well predictable, non-cyclical, and stable business. The adjusted EPS, that excludes the amortization of goodwill, and in last year also it excludes some write down in the oil and gas business. So the adjusted EPS was about 83 last year, and now it's dropped to low 70s. Dividend is about 30. The company is set its financial priorities as follows. It want to keep the margins at around 11%, and I think it can do that very well, because it just, you know, just needs to continue the business as it is. Wants to continue to reduce net debt. As you will see in the next slide, the debt was elevated due to the acquisition several years ago, but has been steadily going down. And it wants to focus on improving return on investment capital, and also pay sustainable dividend. And I expect, as the debt continues to get smaller and smaller, that there will be further space to increase shareholders' return. Here's a quick look at the balance sheet. It's basically pretty straightforward. The most important things, I think, for us is to look at the debt. The company did the last large acquisition in 2014 for about 900 million pounds sterling. It was financed partially by rights issue, but partially by debt. But the debt has been going down since then. And at the end of 2019, financially, it was about 1.1 billion sterling, so about 1.6 times EBITDA. And according to JP Morgan estimates, it's expected to decrease to about 1.0 times EBITDA in 2022. So there's certainly a space for further shareholders' returns in terms of buybacks, increased dividends, or maybe acquisitions, hopefully smart ones. It's also important to understand that 95% of business that the company does is either with government or with blue chip organizations. So they have very strong counterparties, and the average age of the order book is 8 years, you know, so there's really a very good visibility of its business. And if, in case you're wondering how skewed the order book or the business is towards large contracts, when it isn't, because top 10 contracts represent about 25% of its business, you know, so it's actually quite well spread across its own business, its various businesses, business sectors, and customers. The net debt in 2015 was 1.3, is now about 1.1, continuing going down. The company expects to generate about 1.4 billion free cash flow over the next 5 years, and that's after pension contributions, which run at about 60 million every year. So even after that, so you know, in 5 years, that's 300 million. Even after that, they expect to generate 1.4 billion of free cash flow over the next 5 years, and the company is trading at quite decent free cash flow multiples. Change in the IFRS 16 accounting treatment of operational leases that requires its capitalization on balance sheet. It has effect of increasing net debt to EBITDA by 0.5. And in terms of capex over depreciation, they run typically at around 1.1 times. So not very high capex requirements, basically mostly just replacing the depreciation. The medium-term financial targets, the group expects its revenue to grow by around 4% every year. Let's take a look at the valuation ratios. At the price of 555, which was when I was sending this to John, the stock trades at around 7.7 times this year's earnings, and dividend yield about 5.4%, and free cash flow nearly 9% free cash flow yield. And the stock price, I think, today is a bit lower than that, so the multiples are even lower. And when you look back, 20 years back, these multiples are at historical lows, and you might be wondering why a company that is not dynamic in its growth but still growing steadily should trade at 7 times earnings and free cash flow that is free cash flow yield approaching 10%. So when I ask myself a question why Babcock is so cheap, I can come up with several reasons, and you can judge by yourself is their validity. The first reasons are related to the country. You know, Brexit on the horizon means that the UK market is being one of the most undercrowded trades for maybe 2 years now, because investors tend to be underweight, tend to wait until Brexit is behind us, and this is one of the reasons why I find many investment opportunities today in the UK market. And Babcock is probably also partially touched by this reason. There's also some industry reasons. You may remember that last year there was a large a bankruptcy in the UK. Actually, it was the largest ever trading liquidation in the UK, which began in January 2018. The company name was Carillion. It was a British multinational facilities management and construction services company. And although its business is very different from Babcock, you know, it basically raised questions about the whole regime or scheme of UK government, you know, outsourcing businesses to private sector. And of course, Babcock is a big supplier of UK government. So many companies that were selling businesses to UK government in various sectors were downgraded, you know, by the market. There's also some company related issues. One of them was related to the accounting. There was an accounting change recently introduced regarding the accounting treatment of long-term contracts. And some companies, so there was, you know, market was questioning whether Babcock was, you know, using fair accounting for its contracts. And it turned out that it was, because some other companies had to issue restatements or restate their figures, and because their accounting for treatment for contracts was too aggressive. In the case of Babcock, it was not, and I think their accounting treatment is you know, reasonable and quite conservative. But also there's the overhang coming up from their largest acquisition ever. In 2014, Babcock acquired a helicopter transport services company called Avincis for £920 million, which for company of Babcock's size was a very large acquisition. You know, Babcock's annual net income at that time was, you know, say between 300 and 400. So they paid 2.5 times its annual income for an acquisition. And they finance it partially by fully underwritten rights issue, and when you look price, I think at 790, but when you look at the chart of the Babcock stock price, then you can see that it peaked at the acquisition time. So the market clearly took the acquisition very negatively, and I think over time we can think that that was a good view, because I think the acquisition was overpriced and it has brought some debt and it has diluted the other better business with new lower quality business. So, but you know, we are now 5 years later, or nearly 6 years later. The company has divested some of the businesses, has worked down through big part of the debt, and you know, the stock price is less than half than it was at the time, and I think also the management hopefully took a lesson and would not attempt to do large acquisition in the future. So when you take all these reasons, then I think these are reasons why the stock is so cheap today, and also Neil Woodford funds own 5% or owned 5% of Babcock when they were closed. So there's currently some overhang, because, you know, these funds have to be pretty much sold and liquidated. So there are several reasons why I think people can argue that Babcock deserves to be cheap. I can argue that some of those reasons are invalid or short term, and I think the business is actually quite good. And if you're looking for something that is cheap and provides low cyclicality, good visibility, solid, steady business, then you know Babcock might be the stock to look at. So John, that's all from me. If you have if someone has questions, then please.
Daniel, thank you very much for another interesting presentation. We don't have a lot of time, but I think we can take one or two questions. Perhaps tell us how you will be monitoring this idea over time. Are there any key items or data points that you're going to be looking at?
Not really. The company had because the business doesn't move. The business doesn't move in jumps or doesn't change very fast. I mean, a lot of these things are very well predictable. So the only important data points or surprises in positive or negative ways could come from the management. In a negative way, they can decide to use the finances available to do another silly acquisitions, which would certainly be very bad. But they can also decide to return more of the cash to shareholders, because if they can generate so much cash and the debt is approaching 1x EBITDA, then certainly they could, and the stock is traded at 7x earnings, then they also indicated that they would look at buybacks, and I think that would be very very lucrative at these valuations. But the downside risk also certainly come from potential deterioration of public sector budgets, particularly in the defense sector. But UK traditionally has been a big spender on the defense. It's one of three, I think, countries in the NATO that actually spent the agreed 2% of GDP on defense, and I expect this to continue. You can also the downsides can also come from an increased level of bidding competition, but that can be said for any business. And also, what I'll be watching myself closely is potentially a sustained push against the involvement of the private sector in the public sector. But I cannot really imagine that government would take over these businesses back. I know that would probably be a disaster. So this would be the main things to watch, I think.
And perhaps just a quick question at the end. What companies do you consider to be the closest comparables that one could look at as well?
Well, the leader in the UK is BEA, of course. It's much bigger. And the mix of services is different. So Babcock doesn't really have a very close peer, but BEA is the closest one. But then you can look at many other, government suppliers around the world. But they differ because many of them actually produce weapons, which Babcock does only on margins. So doesn't really have very direct peer.
Great. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Daniel, thank you very much for being with us once again and sharing this idea with our members. We truly appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, John. Thank you for the invitation. And I'm looking forward to listening to the others presenting at this conference.
Our next live session starts in just a few minutes. Until then, goodbye, everyone.